How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 29 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can head on to iTunes and search Locked On Thunder to subscribe to the podcast there. You can also leave a review if you're feeling like it too. Locked On, you can look up any Locked On podcast. You know, if you're a Thunder fan, you look up Locked On Thunder and you find me. You want to look up the Celtics, you can look up Locked On Celtics and so on. We got 25 NBA teams now. We got a bunch of NFL teams corresponding as well. You can listen to me on Tuesdays and Thursdays. This is obviously the Thursday one. I'll be on again on Tuesday. And today, I've got a couple of really fun guests coming on a little bit later. Tom Reed and Benyam Kadeem from one of my favorite NBA podcasts, Believe the Hype, is going to be joining in a little bit of time to talk about Team USA's Wednesday night game against Australia, where they barely pulled off a 10-point win. But first, let's get to some Olympic talk related to the Thunder. Domantas Sabonis, he's looked really good so far. And here are the numbers in case you're not just sitting around watching Lithuanian basketball all day. 10 points, 2 rebounds, 4 of 8 shooting, 19 minutes in a win over Brazil. That was their first game. Then in their second game, Tuesday night, 8 points, 7 rebounds, 3 steals, 4 of 7 shooting, 25 minutes in a win over Nigeria. It's not really about the lines, though. It's not about the playing time, considering he's actually getting minutes at 20 years old when Alex Abrines, the other Thunder rookie, is playing in the Olympics, but he isn't seeing the floor at all with Spain. It's about kind of the way that Lithuania is using him. And in some ways, I think we're seeing a bit of the model of how he's going to be used in the NBA with the Thunder. He's played a decent amount of four next to Jonas Valanciunas in Lithuania. And I think that's going to be the case with the Thunder too, especially if Sabonis plays well out the gate. He's going to be a power forward. He's going to be next to Steven Adams or next to Enes Kanter. And those guys are not going to play the four next to him, obviously. He's going to be the four, and that's in part because he doesn't really protect the rim. And you know, someone can, or you want to keep him closer to the rim. And something that we've seen from Sabonis is defensively, Lithuania is letting him stray from the rim. And I think that's an interesting thing. We didn't really see that a lot with Gonzaga. I know that was something the Thunder kind of expect him to be able to do defensively, to be able to stray from the rim and be a little more switchy than maybe he let on at Gonzaga and in college. And that's kind of something we've seen. He's got pretty quick feet, I think. I know there, you know, are some people who disagree with that. I don't think he's, you know, he's killing it in the cone drill, but he's quick enough to be able to stray away and maybe switch on to a wing in an emergency situation and that kind of stuff. And we've seen him switch on ball screens. We've seen him have the smarts to come over and help and impede driving lanes when he has to stray away from the rim. And in this international format, obviously, when he's guarding fours, he has to stay away from the rim more because most teams, a lot of teams, are playing lineups with a four out and one in with a four that can shoot. I think we've seen a lot of interesting stuff from him defensively, and I don't think he's ever going to protect the rim or anything like that, but I do think it's possible he could become a solid defensive four, and you don't need to protect the rim as a four. People talk about how all bigs need to protect the rim. I don't think bigs need to protect the rim. I mean, you need a five that's going to protect the rim, and it's nice to have one of your bigs protect the rim. It's great to have a four that protects the rim, but how many fours protect the rim? Not that many. Ibaka protected the rim as a four. Derek Favors protects the rim as a four, but Derek Favors is almost like a five who just plays the four. I mean, Derek Favors, he's an awesome player. He's tremendously underrated, but Derek Favors is, you know, a five who plays the four. There aren't that many fours who protect the rim. It's mostly fives who protect the rim. So if he's going to be a four, I'm not that worried. The thing is, if you're a four who doesn't shoot threes and you don't protect the rim, then that's a different story. You have to be particularly unique in the rest of your skill set. Now, Sabonis, I think off the bat, is going to be somewhat of a contributor. And I think we've seen that so far with the way that he's been playing in Lithuania, the way that they're using him on offense, too. I mean, he's got moves. His footwork is smooth on offense. In the post, it's nice. He's able to receive passes, gather, and make quick decisions in the post. He's finished, you know, on lob passes. He's not finishing alley-oops on lob passes, but he's finishing on little lobs over defenders when he gets fronted, and he's finishing on the other side of the rim. He's making moves. He's got a nice hook shot. I mean, he's really skilled in the post, and I don't think the Thunder are going to be posting him up all the time, but it's going to be an option. I think it's going to be something they're going to be able to do. I think we're seeing that with his performance in Lithuania. He hasn't been absolutely tremendous, but at 20 years old, I think he's been pretty impressive. I think it's something the Thunder should be excited about. I think it's something Thunder fans should be excited about. I don't think he's, you know, it's not like he's going to come out, and I don't think he's necessarily going to be a Rookie of the Year candidate or anything like that, but I do think he's going to be a contributor in Billy Donovan's rotation, and that's going to be a nice addition for them. If you're at all interested in watching Lithuania plays, the team plays Argentina Thursday night. That's at 8:30 p.m. Central Time, so you're all out of work. So if you want to listen to that or watch that game, you can. That's going to be on, I haven't checked, but it's going to be on one of those, you know, one of the NBC channels, probably NBC Sports Network or wherever they're broadcasting Olympics for you. You could probably stream it online if you're feeling particularly daring too. Well, let's take a quick break, and then let's get into Tom and Benyam.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So let's welcome in two of my favorite Australian podcasters from Believe the Hype. Let's see if I do this right. Tom Reid and Benyam Kadeng. How is that? Is that a terrible accent?
That was pretty good. It was a little crocodile D, but it was good.
I mean, I've heard worse. So, I mean, you're on the probably on the Rushmore of Americans trying Australian accents, which is, it's good, but it's not brilliant.
Yeah, okay. I'll take that. I'm fine with that. Do you guys want to introduce yourselves so people know who's talking when?
Yeah, so I'm Tom Reid.
All right.
That is
an expansive introduction.
And Benyam Kadein, and we make up Believe the Hype.
There you go. So Believe the Hype, great NBA podcast. You can listen to that. They're really funny. They're really good. We're recording this shortly after the U.S. Pretty much beat Australia. I'm saying pretty much. They did. They scored more points.
After the U.S. upset Australia.
Yeah, the U.S. upset Australia. Exactly. 98-88, Carmelo Anthony, 31 points. Kyrie, 19. Melo was ridiculous. He hit 9 threes and was just Olympic Melo all over. Australia actually led in the fourth quarter, though, for the first time. First time U.S. has trailed in the fourth quarter of a game since 2004. So congrats, guys.
Thanks. And it was also the first time that the U.S. had been down at halftime since 2004, too. So, it's the records were tumbling.
I'll ask Benyam first. Should you guys be excited about this? Like, they lost by 12, or they lost by 10. Should you guys be excited about this, losing by 10? Is that still an exciting moment, or is that, like, kind of – or is it somewhat bittersweet thinking, it was 72-70 in the fourth quarter?
I think Andrew Bogut kind of summed it up well after the game. Like, you know, it's all well and good that they played well, but they still lost the game. So we still take an L in this one. But I think there is a lot of positivity in terms of the Boomers executed their sets really well. They played, I think, the style of play that they wanted to play against the USA. They were really, really good defensively. And I think they got a lot of the things that they wanted out of this game. So I think for them, they'll be happy that, you know, the way that they played was how they planned on playing. But as you said, it is still an L, so it is a little bittersweet in that regard. But having said that, this is Team USA after all, so we do have to kind of put things in perspective.
Tom, give me the homer take.
Yeah, the homer take is, well, I mean, yeah, like what Benyam said, at the end of the day, it's an L. The team will be probably the most upset out of everyone about how this finished up, because I feel that they'd think that they would have been able to execute better down the stretch, that it would have been either a lot closer or they would have actually been able to amazingly get the win. But I mean, you look at where the USA is in basketball, like, obviously they're the best team in the world. You look at where Australia is now, where Australia has been over the last few years, to come this close, and considering, like, the lowest paid player on the USA team makes more than double of what the entire Australian bench combined makes, like, this is a win for Australia, just even getting this close. Even, you know, almost shaking the USA, having the USA have to think, oh, hang on a minute, we've actually got to really get in this game here, or else we're going to be embarrassed at Steph Marbury Athens levels of embarrassment. So, you know, this was a win for Australia. This was a win for every other team in the tournament, because now the other guys in the other teams in this tournament can think, hang on a minute, if Australia can do this to these guys, then what makes the thing that we can't even do better?
Here's what I want to know. Mark Stein reported before the game that that Australia was holding back some of its best schemes from Team USA for later in the tournament. And they played really well. Like, they were really well coached and looked like they had, like, they were really giving the U.S. I mean, look, the U.S. played badly and looked lazy on defense at times and just kind of low energy in general. But they, like, they killed them with screening and off-ball actions and all that stuff all game. I want to know what that stuff they have up their sleeve for next time.
You'll have to wait for the gold medal game.
Listen to how cocky we are right now.
Well, that's just the normal Wednesday for you guys.
Yeah. Right. I mean, a lot of so we saw a little bit of it in this game, but Andre Lemanis, his teams are renowned for their full court press. And whilst we saw a bit of that in this game, I feel that defensively, Australia held back some of its defensive styles and defensive patterns that they normally play, which is I think that's going to be the big difference coming into this next game. And I mean, he also played a different rotation at times to what we've seen in some other games. Like, Kevin Lish didn't get as many minutes as he got in past games. We saw Brock Modem for the first time. Chris Goulding got a little bit more court time. So he didn't play his regular rotation, what we've seen through the first few games in this as well, which I feel that could be a little bit of him holding some stuff up the sleeve, plus also giving some guys some court time. He hasn't seen anything yet.
We did get max contract David Anderson, though.
Oh, he's coming back. 36-year-old David Anderson wants to make an NBA comeback.
I learned today that David Anderson spells his way the Chris Anderson way and not the Brady Anderson way, with an E and not an O. That always throws me off.
I think I've been spelling his name wrong for like 8 years.
Let's talk about that offense, though. They, first of all, props on setting, breaking a record for most illegal screens set in a game ever.
The final count was 200.
And even more impressive that it happened in a game with an inordinate amount of touch fouls. But in all seriousness, that's kind of – you can get away with those kind of sliding screens in international play more than you can in the NBA. And, I mean, that's a skill. Setting illegal screens, I always say it. Setting screens, dirty screens that you can get away with. Like, you're not a good screen setter if you're setting screens according to the rules.
If it doesn't get called, it's not illegal. That's how I say.
Kevin Garnett has never in his life set a legal screen. And on a related note, neither has Andrew Bogut, who was so good today. And they were so good at freeing guys off the ball from those actions. I thought that was a really impressive showing. I think it's interesting that's a good point that you make, that some of the more, you know, the crazier stuff that they're going to show next time, it might be on the defensive end. I'm just waiting for them to come out flying in the flying V like the Mighty Ducks next time.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the storyline that we're seeing right now for the Boomers, it does look a lot like a Disney Mighty Ducks movie. I mean, with the team, like, USA is Iceland. Like, regardless of what you say, the USA is Iceland. They're the best team in the world. They're supposed to win everything. And this Boomers team has, you know, pulled off a few wins against better competition, are starting to believe in themselves. And, you know, it's only a matter of time until they're going to change jerseys and start calling themselves the Ducks.
How far do you think this team goes?
Start with you, Benyam.
Depending on how the draw shakes out, I think for them, the medal round, so the final four, is really where they – where they want to end up, and you know, coming into the tournament, I think that was the goal, was get to the medal round and then, you know, see how things progress from there. And I think that's still pretty realistic. Obviously, you want to avoid the USA, you know, for as long as possible in the knockout round. So I think if the draw falls their way favorably, I think getting to the final four is realistic for this team.
Yeah, I agree. I'd say that the final four is realistic. Now, at the start of the tournament, I didn't think that was the case. I thought that they were going to be a quarterfinals team, but with the fact that now the draw also means that if they can beat Venezuela and China, which are the two teams, the two real easy beat teams from this group, means that they'll finish second in this pool behind the USA, meaning that they'll now avoid the USA until a potential gold medal game matchup, which makes me think, with what they did to China, what they did to France, what they did to Serbia, who were two legit medal contenders, means that the final isn't an unrealistic an unrealistic proposition for this team to be able to make. So you know, right now I'm thinking that this team could potentially go all the way through to another matchup against the USA in the final.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. Maybe I'm an Australia homer now.
I think the whole world has just, it seems like, has fallen in love with this Australian team.
They're fun to watch. They're really fun to watch, and they have, like, they're kind of dirty, which isn't surprising because they have a ton of Australians, and Australian players are always dirty. Allegedly dirty. Is Matthew Dellavedova dirty? I feel like, is Matthew Dellavedova dirty is like the NBA, like the niche NBA equivalent of, is Joe Flacco elite?
I was waiting for that reaction today because obviously Dellavedova gets a lot of the attention for being the dirty guy in the NBA, and he's the Australian guy, but waiting for a lot of NBA fans to see an entire team of Australians and realize that that's not just Delly, that's just how Australia plays. Like they go hard every possession.
Oh yeah, like Andrew Bogut is ridiculous. I mean, look, I love Andrew Bogut's game. I think he is a really underrated player, and he had kind of a down year last year, but he's still a really good player in my opinion. And but he is, like, part of the reason he's a really good player is because that dude will go within an inch of breaking the rules every single time.
A couple of those hard hits on Kyrie Irving really, you know, kind of send a little bit of a message, and I think the way that he kind of affects the game is setting the identity for the defense. And as you said, often that is just through sheer physicality that does kind of border on things at times. But that's, you know, that's how they play, and that's how they try and disrupt other teams' offenses is knowing, you know, if whatever you're going to try, there's going to be a body there waiting for you. And look, they did a great job of that for, you know, the most part of that game, which was really fun to watch.
Okay, this is a Thunder podcast. You have no idea that you just made a great transition. So congratulations. This is a Thunder podcast, so I'm going to make this a little bit thundery. So I want to know, do Australians think of Kyrie Irving, who was born in Australia and could have played for the Australian national team? Do they think of Kyrie Irving the same way Thunder fans and like hot take artists think of Kevin Durant going to the Warriors?
Yes, they do. And it's completely unwarranted. I mean, this is one of the banes that I have with Australian basketball Twitter, which is an awesome Twitter to get on if any of you Thunder guys want to get on, is that there's like this thing that where everyone's like, oh, he abandoned Australia. He doesn't want to play for Australia. I hate Kyrie Irving. When, like, the dude was here for 2 years. He is technically Australian. Like, he's still got an Australian passport. He's still an Australian citizen, even though he's also American, and he's more American than he is Australian, and he wants to play for the American national team, which there's absolutely nothing wrong with that at all. But, you know, there's so many people who just completely just hate Kyrie Irving purely because he doesn't want to play for a team, for a country that he left when he was 2 years old.
That game would have been really interesting if Kyrie Irving were playing for Australia.
Oh, yeah. I mean, more Australians scored points than Americans in this game.
Dellavedova played great, though, I have to say.
Yeah, he has been well. Really, really good. His game management, I think, is something that's really you get to see a lot more of that in these kind of settings when he's the starting point guard and has the ball in his hands a whole lot. But, I mean, he had like 11 assists today. He had 13 against Serbia. His lob game, you know, playing with LeBron and Tristan Thompson has done wonders for him. And we're seeing the fruits of that in Rio. But, yeah, he's probably been the most impressive player, I think, at the game so far.
Yeah, I mean, arguably out of anyone out there. I mean, he's leading the tournament in efficiency right now with 24. He's averaging a double-double with 12.7 points and 11.3 rebounds. He's shooting 64% from the field. He's gone 3 from 6 from three as well. Like, he's played at another level, and he's not the guy that we usually see, you know, as a stat sheet stuffer for the Australian national team. He sort of plays in that sort of super role player mode, but he's been absolutely filling up the box in this series. And just look back at his game against Serbia as well. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he shot like 75% from the field. He had a double double in that as well. He had zero turnovers. It was arguably the greatest game ever played by an Australian in international competition. Like, even Andrew Gaze, who's sort of, you know, our Michael Jordan in inverted commas. He even said that, as always said, I've never seen anyone play better in a Boomers jersey before.
Something else I want to talk about also Australia related. There has never been an NBA game played in Australia. Is Australia still second in league pass subscriptions of any country behind the US?
Yeah, we're still. I think outside of the US, Australia is number one. So they're providing NBA players and they're watching the NBA. So we're right there in terms of NBA credibility, I'll say.
We're also buying more jerseys than anyone outside of America too.
Shouldn't there be? I mean, look, obviously the market in Australia is not comparable to the market in China. You've got billions of people in China, and what's the population in Australia? Like 25 million, something like that.
Yeah, 24, 25 tops. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously the markets are not even comparable, and that's clearly, you know, you travel that distance for China, and they're not traveling that distance for Australia and it's a market based decision. I'm always surprised that there's never been an NBA. They play preseason games everywhere these days. The Thunder are going to Spain this year. You know, they go to Europe. They go to Asia. And I'm just waiting on that first game in Australia. Do you think it's going to happen?
I think it will eventually happen, but it won't be for a long time. The way that the NBA in Asia plan their major events, so such as preseason games and other events that they bring over here as well, is it's on growing markets and growing the sport. That's sort of the number one thing that they want to do. So they look at markets, obviously like China, like India as well, which they're desperate to get a preseason game over to India, the Philippines, Indonesia as well. Like Indonesia will, as soon as they build their new stadium that they're building in Jakarta, like they'll get a preseason game the very next season. So they look at markets like that, which they can get amazing, massive growth off, huge places, which are you know, growing basketball markets, which can then convert into NBA fans. Whereas they look at Australia as a market where the NBA has done virtually nothing down here. They haven't had to. The sport's grown on its own. It's only a population of 24 million. So they're like, well, we're not putting much behind this market in terms of marketing or anything like that. It's growing on its own. So why would we invest more into this market to grow it at, which would be such a small percentage worth of growth in comparison to the future growth that they can get out of those other markets?
How disappointed are you by that? That's the real question.
Oh, 100% disappointed.
You want to boo Steven Adams in person?
We'll come see you, Fred. Don't worry.
I'm sure Oklahoma City is very similar to Sydney and Melbourne.
Yeah. I've never been to Oklahoma City, so I can't say for sure, but I'm sure they have similarities.
Both speak English.
That's a start.
That is true. That is very true.
Both over-index on Kiwis.
Basically, I just want a game in Australia so that I can go to Australia.
How good would it would be great to get the Thunder down here, having, say, a Thunder Mavericks game, a Bogut v Adams game in Sydney or Melbourne. You could even do it a double and take it over to New Zealand as well and play in Auckland. I think that would be something that would be really fun, and that would really sort of get both markets down here in Australia and New Zealand really, really into it too.
And it is something that a lot of fans are really sort of crying out for. And as you said, you kind of see preseason games going everywhere. And Australia is just that next market that's that little bit too far away, and that there's no real reason for the NBA to do it. So we kind of get left out in that regard. But I think if we keep pumping players into the NBA, I think they're going to have to eventually fold and come out here and do something for the fans.
I tell you what's actually more of a chance of happening, and it's something that is in conversation at the moment, is the next World Cup is in China. In the lead up to that World Cup, there's a good chance that Team USA will come down and play in Australia, which I think that's even better than having an NBA game down here, because you'd have, you know, all of those Team USA stars down here taking on Australia in either Sydney or Melbourne or both. I think that's something that would be quite a cool thing to have, and with the fact that the World Cup's going to be on this side of the world, it makes sense.
And that's when Australia finally gets its win.
We'll see. You mean the whole tournament or just the game?
I don't even know what I mean. I have no idea what I mean.
And well, we'd have Simmons and Exum back then as well. Thon Maker should be in that team too. So that could be a pretty fun series, depending on who the USA bring down.
Is there anything that you guys want to – anything you want to plug, anything you want to say, any hot Thunder takes that you want to spew off before you go?
Russell Westbrook's going to win the MVP.
Oh, yeah, you think that? Let's talk about that.
That's, I don't think that's a hot take, though. I just think that's going to happen.
I don't think it's a hot take at all. Do you think he's – people I keep seeing – I wrote a column on this today. I keep seeing people say that he's going to average a triple-double. I don't think that's going to happen, but his numbers are going to be insane.
Yeah, averaging a triple-double is really hard. Like, he'll go close. Like, he could put up a 20, 27, 10, and 6. Like, that could happen. That's not crazy, but I mean, I think he pretty much did that this year.
He's got the second highest MVP odds right now. LeBron is number one. He's number two. I would pick him to win MVP over LeBron just because LeBron is going to be is on the wrong side of 30 and kind of cruises through the regular season at this point. And look, LeBron obviously at his peak is just still outrageous, and his peak is, as we saw in the finals, better than anybody else's. But LeBron cruises through the regular season, and Russell Westbrook is not going to cruise this year. I think we're pretty certain about that.
I don't think Russell Westbrook's cruised at anything. Even if he was on a cruise, he'd still be going at 100.
Russell Westbrook's legs are actually like the steam engine at the bottom of the cruise. he's the guy on the bike, like providing power to the entire ship.
Yeah, he keeps the lights in the casino on.
Yeah.
But LeBron doesn't really have anything to prove, whereas I think this season Russell Westbrook does, and that's the kind of fuel that, you know, pushes guys to kind of go to that next level, and not only for himself, but, you know, the Thunder kind of need him to play at that level if they're going to do anything this season. So it's almost like a little bit of a perfect storm with obviously what's going on at the Warriors and them kind of ruling each other out, and the fact that LeBron, you know, he could win the MVP, but it's more likely that he won't. So this is a really nice little window here that I think Russell Westbrook will take advantage of.
So the
and it's
year...
not like playing at an MVP level is sort of like a step up for Russell Westbrook either, because he was playing at an MVP level last year for most of the season. It just happened that there was another guy who was playing at an even MVP level in Steph Curry.
So the year that Westbrook won the scoring title, and Durant got hurt and Ibaka got hurt, and Westbrook was down the stretch was just putting up outrageous counting numbers. He averaged like 27, eight, you know, nine assists or so. Last year he was over 10 assists and about 7 rebounds. Last year he was 7.8. Tom, where do you think those numbers are going to be this year?
I think it'll be around about, I think he'll average around 28 points, 11 assists and 8 rebounds. I think he's going to be super close to a triple-double.
That's not crazy. I mean, obviously, I think his efficiency will probably take a dip just given that so much more is going to be asked of him on the offensive end. But that's just natural. And I mean, it wouldn't surprise me even if maybe those assist numbers go down a little bit, because you got to think about how many easy buckets Kevin Durant was racking up for Russell Westbrook's assists. So I think they could maybe come down a little bit, but you know, he could convert those into points of his own. So it kind of balances out there.
Here's the thing about the Russ MVP argument. If you're saying he wins MVP, does that mean you think the Thunder are going to win 50 games this year?
I think they could win between 45 and 50. I don't think that's crazy. Like, they're still pretty good. Like, they have a decent team. They have one superstar on their team, and then they have a good coach. I mean, there's no reason why they can't win 45-plus games.
Oh, I think they're going to win 45, 46, somewhere probably in that range. But, you know, the last MVP to win MVP basically always comes from a 50-plus win team, basically always comes from a top-three seed. And maybe Russ just puts up such absurd numbers that this year is the exception, and he just has such an outrageous year, and his usage skyrockets, and because of that, his numbers skyrocket, and on top of that, he takes another step as a basketball player, which is possible because I thought he had his best year last year. So it's possible that his improvement arc is not, you know, all the way at its peak yet, and he's still just 27 years old. So he can certainly get better, and there are things he can get better at. But, you know, that basically needs to come from a 50-win team. Historically, that's at least what the voters say, whether, you think the guy's the most valuable or not. So it's just that's what kind of the interesting storyline will be on Russ. It's will the team win enough games to put him in MVP contention, whether you think he's the MVP or not?
You mentioned his usage, and that was going to be my next question. I mean, in 2014-15, his usage was an insane 38.4. Do you think that this year he could go over 40? I'm going to set the over-under at 39. What do you think his usage will be this year?
Under. Yeah, no one... 39 would be the record. Like, that would be the record since the merger. I don't know what, like, Wilt Chamberlain's was, but since the merger, no one has had a usage rate higher than Kobe in 05-06. And that was the year when – that was the Smush Parker year when he averaged, you know, over 35 a game. And I think he was 38.7 that year. I think Russ kind of took a – I think he's going to shoot a lot. I think his mentality kind of he took a little adjustment in his mentality last year and became a little bit more of a natural distributor. And I don't think he's going to revert. I have a feeling he's not going to revert. He's going to shoot a lot still. And he's going to shoot more than he did last year. And he could lead the league in usage rate. I just don't think it's going to be the highest usage rate that we've ever seen in our entire lives.
I agree. I think the sample sizes that we've seen from Russ, you know, when KD's out, he's had to play like that out of desperation because Durant was out. They kind of needed him, you know, in those short bursts to play like that. Whereas over an 82-game season, when he's coming in, you know, from day one, I don't think that's going to be the mentality or the mindset straight away. I think it's going to be, I need Oladipo to do this. I need more out of Enes Kanter. I need to try and get these guys to a level that will allow, you know, me to make them better and make me better. I don't think he's going to go out there and just be, I'm trying to drop 40 every night. I think that's just, that's unfeasible even for us to, I think even be kind of having that, that mentality, because it's not going to win them a lot of games.
Yeah. I counter that as well with what if, you know, a few games into the, say a few weeks into the season, and he's been, you know, playing like that, like you're saying right now, but the team is around 500, a little bit below 500. And Russ in his head, you know, he still thinks that this team will be, you know, almost the level where they were before, like, which is, you know, fair enough. You got to think that. Do you think that he then reverts? Do you think that then he starts playing super duper Russ?
I mean, that's certainly possible. It's definitely possible. I don't think it's going to happen. I think, look, he's going to shoot a ton. I mean, obviously, he could have a 35% usage and lead the league, for sure. 34, 35, something like that. But, like, his usage this past year was his lowest since his third year in the league, which is the year he first started, like, really, really dominating the ball and became an all-star for the first time and, you know, really jumped into, you know, star-level type of player. And I think he's obviously going to shoot more because Kevin Durant's not there and he'll handle the ball more. I really, and I could be wrong on this, I just believe that he took a change in his mentality last year, and I don't think we have a reason to believe that that's going to revert back just because Kevin Durant left. You know, I think it takes more than just somebody leaving for that to change, because that was a change in philosophy. It wasn't reactionary. That was something we saw over 82 games and the postseason. So, and there are times where he'll probably have some games where he shoots 38 times this year. Like that'll probably happen, but he had a game where he shot 45 times a couple of years ago. Like, I don't know if that's necessarily going to happen, and I don't know if we're just, my argument is really just we're not going to see the highest usage rate in the history of the NBA.
I think that's a safe bet.
We're going to see an insanely high one. I think he'll lead the league in usage. I just don't think it's going to be the highest one ever. Before we go, what do you guys want to plug? Podcast, Twitter handles, all that fun stuff.
Well, you can find all of our work over at BelieveTheHypeNBA.com. You can find our podcast, the Believe the Hype NBA podcast. We're in all the usual places, iTunes. You can follow myself on Twitter at Benyam Kadane, BenyamKidane, and the site at BT Hype NBA. Over to you, Tom.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TRA Reed, or hit me up on MySpace. Just search my name. I'm probably on there still. I haven't been on that account for a few years, but it's there.
Can I find you on Friendster?
No, Friendster didn't make it down here.
Friendster wasn't? There was no Friendster there?
No, we're not checking for Friendster.
I don't think so. I think we were like a year and a half behind with literally every installment of early social media.
ICQ was a thing.
Find you on MySpace. I'll find your music profile on MySpace. Sounds great.
Good God. No, thanks very much for having us, Fred. We really, really appreciate you doing some fantastic work on the show.
Of course. As always, I'm running the show Tuesdays and Thursdays until about mid-September. That's when I jump back to the daily format. If you're subscribed to the show, you'll be all good on getting those. Remember, you can head on to iTunes and subscribe to Lockdown Thunder there, or find the show on audioboom.com. If you have questions or comments, email lockdownthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ, and log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out my blog, Thunder Road, to follow up team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. I'm back with you Tuesday when I'll be playing my favorite offseason NBA game with Locked On Celtics host Jay King. You'll just have to tune in on Tuesday to see what that game is. Until next time, though, Locked On Thunder is locking up.